I need to fix that somehow. Anyway, hello everyone tuning in now or later if you're watching the replay or listening into the podcast version. This is our first episode of the year of Through Artistic Eyes, and I am Christopher D. Casson, your photographer, podcaster, obviously. And also artist that happens to be on the spectrum that was formerly reclusive and now wants to explore more of the world and learn more about it and create that connection with other people, sharing worlds. So here with me today is George Bailey. He is the president of Z Pods, a St. Louis startup that is developing sensory-friendly beds for children on the autistic spectrum. He's also CMO of Vanguard International Advisory Group, a consultancy that focuses on strategic planning. And he also has previous work in finance services. And I believe he also, let's see, and he also taught different courses in Mandarin Chinese, Danish, and English, which, funny enough, I did try to learn Mandarin Chinese on Duolingo. I really need to get back to that. Although I've been focused on Spanish. But anyway, back to you. You're also involved in the St. Louis, Missouri community through your church as well, and also sits on the board of directors for the Asian American Chamber of Commerce of St. Louis and the St. Louis chapter of Autism Speaks. He is fluent in Mandarin Chinese, German, and Danish, married, has five children, two of which are blessed with autism. And I like your choice of words there, blessed instead of cursed. Not disease, it's just something you have, you're born with. So, were you thinking this when you first found out your children are on the spectrum? Kind of give like a parental perspective for those out there.
You know, that's such a great question because I've thought about this and I've seen fathers before who, you know, when they find out that their son is autistic or their daughter, you know, there's this kind of stereotype out there where you're in denial. You know, it's just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that my child, you know, is going through this terrible thing. And I, honest to goodness, I've never felt that way. And that's not just a kind of, you know, saying what the autistic community wants to hear. I there was some concern, of course. You know, there was kind of like, huh, you know, Joseph isn't walking as quickly as other kids, and he seems to have some verbal problems, and he finds it really distressing when he's in a large audience and people are clapping. You know, there were some things that were giving me, there were little red flags that were saying, okay, you know, your child has a different perspective on this world. And of course, there were also some other things that I thought were a little bit sad. Joseph, I remember very vividly walking up and down the stairs in our apartment building. We were living in Germany at the time, and he would hum these beautiful tunes. He had this gorgeous sense of pitch, and I was so excited. And he lost that. And that was something that was very hard. So that part of it was hard, but none of it gave me any sort of kind of regret or, you know, a sense of like, oh my gosh, what have I gotten myself into? There was none of that. I've always been very proud of my son, very grateful for him. Incidentally, you know, he has become a lot more verbal. He sings again, which is, I love listening to him sing. I think it's just great. So from that perspective, it never really scared me. I don't remember being overly concerned. It was just it meant that there was going to be a different kind of work that I was going to do with him than what I had imagined before. And he's a great kid, you know.
Yeah, I love that 'cause, you know, parents and there's some parents that just sometimes wish they just had normal kids and whatnot, and to me that's just the wrong way to look about it, because each one of them is unique in their own special way, and we should learn to enhance that and then become themselves instead of what we ex want them to be, you know?
And the only thing, the only time I actually get really concerned, is when I think that there is something between my child and what my child wants to do. And autism, sometimes, you know, I mean, there's any number of things that can get in the way. And the only time that I get distressed is if it's any of those things, and that's across, that's everybody. You know, I, as you said, normal, like what is normal? I don't have a single normal kid. You know, even my other kids who are qualified as neurotypical, you know, they all have their quirks. I don't care. It's fun. I was a really, really weird kid. So I don't, you know, I as a kid, I lived in a glass house, and I'm not going to throw bricks at other kids. I particularly not my own. I think my kids rock. I really do. All five of them, they're awesome. Joseph has autism. Madeline is autistic, and but they're outstanding.
Man, yeah, I'm definitely glad you took that perspective, because you know there's definitely some people out there that, you know, especially with going in the schooling system where people are not exactly as accommodating, I guess you could say, but stuck in the old ways, thinking, oh, this child just needs more discipline and blah, 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 blah. And it brought a bunch of hard times. And, you know, since I'm on to that, I'm just going to quickly ask if maybe this is something you experienced with, you know, people just not understanding and sometimes making assumptions.
Yeah. Well, and that always happens. I think if there is one real regret that I have as a parent, and that is, you know, feeling the kind of the compulsion to have to explain my son to everybody, you know, and I don't think that I was terrible about this, but I certainly don't think that I was outstanding, because you can see in people's eyes, and there's nothing more judgmental. Sorry to my German friends, I love them, but there is nothing quite as judgmental as the cold stare of, a German in the bus when your kid is screaming and doing stuff that other kids aren't doing. That always felt a little bit awkward. So, you know, just for context, we lived in Germany for the first 3 years of Joseph's life. He was born in the United States. We moved to Germany 6 weeks after. So really his first 3 years of life were in Germany. And that was a tough time when I could sense that there was a little bit of judgment going his way. And I had other negative experiences where I effectively, you know, I remember one guy, I was at a party and my son was there. It was a family friendly party. And Joseph, I think at this point was probably about, you know, 5 or 6 years old, 6, 7. Mm-hmm. And he was doing his thing. And this guy was very facetious, very condescending, like, you know, it looks like you got a superstar there or something, really just like, ugh. You know, it was really gross. And I came out pretty fast, very in my own kind way, but still very quick to be like, yeah, he does really well for, you know, for all of the challenges that he faces, he does extraordinarily well, you know? And yeah. I think that the guy, it took him a little while to really figure out, oh, this is not, you know, this child is autistic. He's not behaving the way that I'm accustomed to because of, you know, whatever reason, but I don't let people just kind of, you know, insult or look at condescendingly at my children. I think that, you know, it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's fun in a different way. And every child is fun in a different way. And I feel like I could speak to that because I've got enough of them. You know, you get up to that fifth child, I think that you qualify for some sort of, I don't know, some authority on what it's like to raise different kinds of children. But
yeah. Yeah, and I think my dog is trying to like give some input over there with the bike.
He's good. I barely hear him. Barely.
Barely, just barely. He just barely wants to be heard.
I thought it was you. Really, I thought it was you.
So, you know, you first noticed that your autistic children were, well, autistic, but along with that, you also, I believe, discovered that they had a difficult time with getting sleep. That, and when you was wondering when you first noticed this happening, that really started to concern you. And you know, what were the early methods that you use at first to figure out how to make sure they get that good night's sleep? Because the thing is, I remember reading a statistic that, well, I actually posted it, but you know, let's hear about, you know, how you handle the sleep situation when you first saw it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's also a really great question because I don't think that I handled it particularly well. I certainly did not like, you know, Joseph was a little bit of a hard sleeper. He, you know, liked to stay up, and it was hard to get him to settle in his own bed. But it was never as horrible as with other situations that I'm aware of now. I mean, in just full context, right now, I talk every day with moms and dads whose children are having a really rough time sleeping. And so their situations are infinitely more difficult than anything I ever dealt with. But because Joseph was not terrible, but never outstanding with sleep, I merely attributed his sleep patterns to just normal boyhood. You know, I it never made the connection. It was only really recently that I found out that there is this very common problem with sleep among autistics. I had no idea. And the statistic is that up to 80% of all children with autism have a chronic sleep disorder. Up to 90% have a sensory processing disorder. And although it's not totally established, it most certainly is suspected that the sensory processing disorder feeds the challenges with sleep. So, you know, I Joseph was not the hardest situation I've ever dealt with per se, but it was something where I was like, yeah, this is a little bit of a pain. And particularly leading up to, you know, my time working with Z-Pods, and we do these, you know, these beds that are enclosed and help kids sleep better. I remember that Joseph's little brother, William. So William is, let me see, close to 3 years younger than Joseph. William and Joseph share the same bedroom. And then it became, as they started sharing the same bedroom, then it was impossible. That was when it really started to burn. Because, you know, you'd have William, who has ADHD. Again, no child's normal. And, you know, and Joseph, who is autistic. And these two, the way that they would clash in the bedroom. And Will just wanted sleep desperately, but Joseph would be constantly getting out of, at this point we had loft beds for both kids, and Joseph was always getting out and always bouncing around the room and up until 10, 11, 12. And, you know, our normal bedtime was 8 o'clock. That's when it really started to like burn, because William was constantly coming to me being like, Dad, I need to switch bedrooms. I'm like, William, we live in a small house. You're going nowhere. You know,
just, you have no choice.
You have no choice. I am your father. You know, it was, but it was, that's when it really started to hit me. And around the same time, that's when I started working with Z-Pods, maybe a few months after all this. And then it was just really hard. But again, I still did not make the immediate connection. I just thought, like, these are boys, and boys are going to keep each other up doing crazy stuff, and they're going to stunt, and they're going to jump off their beds. And, you know, but I didn't understand that actually what was happening was that Joseph was just overstimulated and that he just couldn't settle. And he was always, you know, he was always stimming. He stims with a pen or pencil in his right hand usually and just waves it the way that you see that I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of like twist the cloth and whatnot sometimes. And, you know, sometimes I used to think that my drawing that I used to do frequently, even during class when I'm not supposed to, is kind of my own way of stimming as well.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Well, you know, and I do this, like I'll have a pen, I'll click my pen, you know, or, you know, and all, and I always like bounce my knee constantly. So the thing is that what I've come to understand through my son is that we all stim, you know, we all do it. Some of us stim more obviously than others.
And but, for, you know, different reasons as well.
Totally.
But for us autistics, you know, it's just dealing with the loud environment, like, and the, all the sensory, such as that dog barking in the background. I don't know what's up with him.
But... Hey, let up on the dog. Let up on the dog. Okay. I like
He's kind of going for so long, barking at the front door and being heard all the way on the other side of the house here. Nice. It's just, but anyway, I did find a statistic here that I did post previously that sleep for people with autism may be less restorative than it actually is for people in the general population. They spend 15% of their sleep time in rapid eye movement stage, and most usually spend 23% of their night in REM sleep.
Yeah, I believe it. I absolutely believe it.
So this the Z Pod idea, this is something that someone else came up on that came to you, or what's the story about that, and what gave the idea to design this new bed for autistics, and you know, all the information and assistance in designing it?
So one of the things we're really careful about is not to take too much credit for, you know, the idea, because it kind of came, first of all, the bed itself that we currently use is sourced from China. So it's actually a Chinese manufacturer. But we are in the process of building the second generation of the bed, which will be a made in USA model. It will be ours. It is, you know, we have already created specs. It's ready. We're just waiting for the timing for when we're going to start creating the molds and building this thing. And it's going to be awesome. Awesome for anybody. Here's the funny thing about the bed. We have been working with folks in the autism community, but the bed's just cool. It looks like a spaceship. You know, if you give a link, people will see it. Yeah. They're like,
This right here.
How many adults do I talk with who are like, I want to sleep in that. I want that bed. And I get it, because I would love to also have that enclosed feeling. And, you know, and if things work out and we really, you know, take off as a business and we find other models, then maybe I will have my own, you know, sleep pod one day. But the key thing was that it was developed in China and throughout Asia as a kind of, they would use it for micro hotels and hostels and things like that.
Kind of like in the Fifth Element movie with those little pods on the spaceship.
Right. Yeah. This is what's so fun, though, about those futuristic movies is that they are so prophetic, you know, that they just kind of have a sense for what's going on. And so we saw this bed. One of my partners stayed in one, thought it was really cool. And then one of his friends needed some beds for his kind of a space station themed living space in Florida that's going up. I don't know if we're allowed to share the pictures just yet. I don't think it's quite prepared, but it's pretty incredible looking. And so he needed beds, and he's like, he had talked to my business partner, says, Gary, you know, how are we going to get these beds? We need something that's convincing. It has to fit in with the future. Gary said, I know exactly the beds. He bought a container, gave half to his friend, and then kept the other half here in St. Louis. And then that's when we started looking at these beds and thinking like, oh my gosh, these could be really cool for kids, you know, who have autism. And we tried it out with my son. We tried it out with another few people, and the reactions were powerful. You know, and I hesitate to use that word because we do not make any medical claims. We're very careful about that. I have too much respect for the science of autism. I know a lot of doctors who, you know, study this. And so we're very careful, and we want to expose our bed to the same kind of rigors, you know, of, you know, empirical studies and such. But we just thought like, okay, this could be really cool. So we started trying it out. And again, the results were pretty incredible. We had a young woman who was sleeping 4 hours a night in a closet, and she jumped to over 10. She had spent, I think it was 11 days in a hospital straight being treated for severe sleep deprivation. I can't imagine that. And I can't imagine what she was going through, what her mother was going through. We just had another case where a young boy about 6 or 7 years old, he was 6 years old. His average sleep hours a week was 25. And in the first week with his bed, he jumped to 76. His parents have never slept this well since he was born. That's a big deal. And the sleep issues, so people don't really understand that when you're losing that kind of sleep, you are hurting. You know,
I know that.
Oh, yeah.
I know that myself, because I've been working. I guess they could say I've been overworking, since there's been several days in a row where I only got one hour of sleep per day because I just kept myself.
Yeah. And when you get like so stimulated, you know, it can be really hard. And so, and there are other like tent concepts and such like that out there. But what we're providing as an alternative is, number one, it's a much more stable and durable than anything that's out on the market at this point. Number two, there's a lot more room for environmental control than anything there is on the market. And when we make our new bed, we're going to up that game substantially. I'm not at liberty to discuss any of the new changes that are coming down, the lane in the near future, but we're doing some pretty cool stuff. And what's wonderful about it is that all of our ideas come from the parents of autistic children and the children themselves. We listen to the parents, we listen to the children, and we're like, what do you want in your dream bed? You know, so that to me is like, that's where we're just a bunch of big kids having fun, because we just want to create the world's coolest bed. And these kids, they love it. They appreciate it.
Yeah, that was something else I wanted to ask about, was what are these themes you thought of from listening to experts on the autism spectrum disorder, as it's now called, that you associate with autism and sleep, and how much did it affect the design of the Z-Pods, especially since is there a reason for the very futuristic look over here?
Well, you know, again, the bed that you're looking at right there in that picture is something that was already designed before we came along and said, hey, we're going to start selling this in the United States. But the bed that we're making, some of the things, the feedback that gives you an idea of where we're coming or where we're going, number one is that, you know, the parents would like to have a little bit more control over the sleep environment for children who are not quite mature enough to be able to make decisions about when the light goes on and when the light goes off. So we have a way of resolving that issue that's going to be really cool. Other things were that children love, you know, and all children really, but autistic children really have like a thing for certain shapes. And so giving a little bit more liberty over the design to the children. In other words, like, here's my dream, and this is the concept we're really trying to create, is that every child is different. Every autistic child is different. And they all have different preferences for what their environment should look like. So let's make a bed that is as changeable as possible according to preference, you know, and the second generation of the bed is going to have some upgrades. And as we keep on building this thing, the third generation is going to get even better. And we have kind of a vision for what it's going to look like in 30 and 40 years, but the costs of what that's going to be are prohibitively high. And one of the things that you have to know about a startup is that the costs are always going to be high coming out the gate, but then you innovate. And as you innovate, you drive the costs down. And that's my dream. I mean, that's something I constantly think of, is how do we drive the costs down? How do we make it more accessible?
And also more proficient to make as well.
Exactly. You know, but what's wonderful about working with these kids is that their needs are so diverse and so different in so many different directions that they push us to the limits of our imaginations, you know? And again, it goes back to, what is autism really? Is it a blessing? Is it a curse? I think that it brings with it some extraordinary insights into the world. And I love getting to see the world through my son's and my daughter's eyes to the extent possible. You know, there are limitations on what a father is really able to understand. That I will always have a certain respect for my son's experience, recognizing that there's just a lot about him that I don't get, you know, and that's okay. I can live with that. But I love working with these kids. They're so much fun.
Nice. And, let's see. I also came up with a quote when I was reading more about you, which I believe you mentioned, if we can help children that don't sleep well, we can change the lives of not just children, but the entire family. Could you elaborate more on this and how, in your mind, this helps?
Well, what happens is that when you have a child who does not sleep well, you have parents and guardians who don't sleep well. It's just a fact, because if I hear the slightest sound come from my kid's bedroom, it's unsettling, you know, and I want rest. And not just that, but when I send my kids to bed at 8 o'clock, well, it's because I have a wife that I adore and with whom I love to be able to read or watch movies or do anything that we want. And it's really nice to know that when we say 8 o'clock, that the kids go to bed at 8 o'clock and not 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. And then we're constantly having to go back and they're like, kids, you know, I just want to watch a movie. I just want some time with your mom. That's it. You know, I feel exasperated when I have to go in and out. And it's funny because that there's a lot of value there when you're not just affecting, you know, how the child is doing, but you're affecting the parent. I mean, the first case study that I told you about, Natalie, who was sleeping in a closet, jumped from 4 to over 10 hours a night in her sleep. You know, her mom was having to cuddle with her almost every night. Her mom was getting 5 hours, 4 hours of sleep a night, you know, so not much better than her daughter. This last family that we helped out, it turned out that the younger brother or the older brother was sleeping 7 hours a night. So it wasn't too alarming, but all of a sudden with when the little brother started to sleep better, the older brother started sleeping closer to 9 and 10 hours. So all of a sudden mom and dad had this realization, oh, this wasn't just hurting our autistic son. This was hurting our other son. And it was most certainly hurting us. And so we've had numerous, you know, similar experiences. Another mother who's 20-year-old daughter was coming in and interrupting her and her husband almost every night. And once we set her up at the bed and she had that feeling of safety and security, then all of a sudden, you know, those instances dropped by about 90%.
Wow.
You know, so it doesn't go all the way, go away all the time. You know, for example, I'll still catch Joseph out of his bed probably once a month, you know, just bouncing around. And then I have to just take him and say, hey, buddy, what's wrong? You know, what can I do for you? But that once a month is different than once a month having him be calm and the other, you know, 29, 30 days having to go in there and just be like, hey, buddy, I noticed you're a little bit stimulated, you know, just
I just know for me, the problems I have with sleeping is just my mind just goes overactive for some reason. And I have no idea why it won't shut off.
And, you know? And we still don't know. And we're very cautious about, you know, what we say we can and cannot do in terms of resolving people's issues. Yeah. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we're dealing with only one part of the entire sleep equation. You know, so for example, you know, good sleep hygiene constitutes having a routine in the evening, you know, brushing your teeth, saying your prayers, reading a book with mom and dad, something like that. These are parts of the equation that we are not trying to get rid of. You know, we don't just foist our bet on people and say, here, take this, problem solved. No. There's still, like, you know, there's habits.
There's multiple factors to it.
Yeah, exactly. We are one of many factors, but sleep is nearly a third of your life. Mm-hmm. So you'd better do it well. Now, you know, and you'll notice I'm not going to be able to give you advice on how to improve your situation. I would always encourage you, if you want to try out one of our bets, yeah, of course, you know, but I think that at the same time, everybody's different. And we have had some kids who have not quite had the same extraordinary reaction to having a tweak on their environment, where there are deeper underlying factors that are still in the way, you know, but most of the families that we help, we have great success with, and we're very happy with that. And we continue to tell parents, you know, if they ask me, you know, George, is this going to help my kid? I don't know. Maybe, you know,
it's certainly better than just going as is with, you know, being stuck awake for like almost a whole month, like in the middle of the night. It's something to try.
It's something to try. And, you know, a lot of the parents that come to us, they really have tried a lot of different things. And so, but what I find, you know, one of the questions I often get that is a really good question is, well, how does it work? And to a certain degree, I have to admit that the answer is, I don't know how it works. I just know that it works. You know, like I've seen it work with kids, but what we're getting from kids in terms of the feedback when we're asking them like, hey, what is your experience like? And for the parents is, I feel safer. I feel more secure. You know, I feel calmer.
kind of like how you have those heavy blankets when you put them over someone autistic, that it's some, there's something about it that's comforting, you know?
Yeah.
And even though I don't like tight clothing, which is why this is kind of loose, but still, it having a heavy blanket over me just
Do you use a weighted blanket at all?
I still need to buy one, but I used to have like one of those heavy, thick ones that I just cover myself, and it does help a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. So. I have to have a good amount of weight on me before I can initiate sleep. I like weighted blankets. I think they're a great idea. Sometimes it takes, you know, like the weighted blanket, if that's like a bow and arrow, then our bed is like a bazooka. and sometimes that's what you need. I mean, sometimes the sleep challenge is that big. And it's funny because what I do tell parents, I say this to every parent we talk to, is like, look, your best case scenario is that you will see some improvements. Your worst case scenario is that you now own the coolest spaceship bed in the world.
Yeah, and it's certainly better than just forcing a bunch of sleeping pills on them. I mean,
yeah. Well, and even, you know, in medicine, in sleep medicine, when you look at the order of things, like what doctors, you know, the standard of what should be tried is, number one, you try to alter the behavior. Mm-hmm. Number two, you go to the environment. And if those don't work, then you go to the medication. But what I'm seeing, and I could be wrong, I could be very wrong, but what I'm seeing and what my wife is seeing, and we've done a lot of the research on this, is number one, try to change the behavior. Didn't work, medication. You're like, we just kind of skip right over that environment because we don't know anything about it. If you look at the research about sleep environment, first of all, how do you quantify environment? You know, it's a really hard question. Second of all, there really are not a lot of studies out there that take a deep empirical look at sleep environment. So we're trying to change that. I've actually been in talks with doctors at the Thompson Center for Autism Research, and we want to look at that. We are enthusiastic about having our beds scrutinized because we're seeing something really incredible and we'd like to know more.
Yeah. And one of the other results, I remember you mentioning that your son actually stopped stimming once he entered the Z-Pod. And I was wondering what other kinds of different things you noticed since, starting this journey of having your own autistic kids going in the sleep pods, or even what the other parents that experienced and told you about.
I love that. And I want to be clear about the stimming part. I don't care if my son stims. I mean, I stim and I don't get angry at myself for stimming, and I don't try to force myself not to stim, like, no stimming, George, no stimming. No, I do it and you do it, and everybody has their way of stimming. But sometimes, not always, stimming communicates a sense of stress, anxiety. And if my son is stimming, now if he's stimming and he's obviously happy and excited, like I'll see him, like he sees that I showed him, the other day I showed him the new Shang-Chi Marvel movie preview. If you haven't seen it, it's awesome. My son loves Marvel. I showed him that, and sure enough, he's jumping up and down and he's stimming and he's doing his thing. Awesome. Because that's the way that he communicates his excitement. But if he's communicating, his stimming in terms of stress. Oh, I can hear that dog.
Yeah, but he's not.
Hey, no worries, no worries. Give him a break. All right.
Yeah, he just wants some company.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. So, in any case, if he's excited, that's great. But if he's distressed, and sometimes he is, then that stimming communicates to me that something's wrong. But what I saw when he got inside the bed was he would just chill out. I was like, wow. As a parent, that's what I want in a bed. I want a bed that compels children to sleep, And actually, we've been floating that around as a startup. It's like, hey, what's our mission? It's to compel people to sleep. You just can't help it. You get in the bed and it's like, man, well, you know, I'm out. So what, that was one of the big things I saw with my son. I've also seen that his sleep, he used to fall asleep, you know, usually around 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, sometimes as late as 12 o'clock. Again,
no TS charge.
Yeah. Not as terrible as other situations I've seen, you know, but still it's kind of like, look, when I want you to go to bed, it's because I want you to go to bed because, you know, I want you to go to bed and I'm tired. And you're tired. Why not have a big tired party? You know? Mm-hmm. So other kids that we've seen, some of the more dramatic changes, for example, we had one young man who's 18 years old, and every day when he would drive home with his mother, when she arrived at the driveway, he would launch into a massive meltdown. And after he got his bed, those meltdowns started decreasing pretty fast. And instead of melting down, what he would do is, and the meltdown would last about 15 minutes and they'd have to cheer him up with something. And it was just, it took bribes and it was just really tough on everybody. But what they started seeing is that instead of melting down, he would just quietly slip out of the car, make a beeline for his room, get in his bed and shut himself in there. And then he'd come out and he's chipper, you know, and that's a big deal. Again, you know, not having to resolve every meltdown, knowing, you know, your child knowing like, hey, there's a place I can go to kind of settle down. So we've seen quite a few things like that. And we've also seen the biggest thing is big jumps in sleep for kids that are getting 4 to 6 hours of sleep thereabouts.
Yeah, I tend to get an average of 4 to 6 hours too. And for me, just me needing to retreat is just finding a place that there's as least amount of stimuli as possible. So I'm guessing that's especially why he goes to Z-Pod, because that cuts out all that extra noise and whatnot. So you can actually focus on being able to sleep instead of, you know, being like me where I live like by an airport, a railroad, and a highway all this noise, and the kids in the neighborhood screaming at the top of their logs. Yep, and the dogs too. I was about to mention that too.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's predictable. And so that's what we're trying to offer in terms of something, you know, going back to what we're trying to establish in terms of scientific studies or clinical trials, is that all of a sudden we're giving predictability to the sleep environment. You know, and so I think that there's value there. I hope so, at least. And I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm just thinking of, you know, some people might be concerned, well, confined spaces, maybe like someone that's claustrophobic. But at the same time, I remember reading from a book called Mastery by Robert Greene when they talked about Temple Grandin, I believe, you know, her autism advocate, that when she was growing up on the farm, that she saw how the cows end up getting calmed down at this one farm with that compression machine thing. And she begged to be able to use it to experience it herself. And she somehow was able to feel so relaxed just from that compression, you know?
Yes.
And it was also part of her own journey of being able to understand other animals in a better way than regular people do, you know?
Well, when our friends started suggesting to us that we ought to look at sensory rooms and the autism community, I could vividly see in my mind, as I started to entertain that thought and think, well, maybe I should listen to them, you know, because we had other ideas about where we could go. But I started to entertain in my mind this kind of my remembrance of the movie about Temple Grandin with Claire Danes, where they, you know, they show Claire Danes in the squeeze machine. And I thought, you know, so that was actually part of the inspiration and part of what built our confidence that we should go in this direction was that exact experience that Temple Grandin had.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, when I first saw this, it was like, is that a top bunk? Is this meant to be part of the design? What's the story behind that exactly?
Well, you know, one of the great things about this bed is that it's durable. So it has a very steady structure, which means you don't have to waste that space above. Like I can't think of another example like it in terms of all of the enclosed beds that exist out there. There is none that has that one feature because they simply can't bear the weight. And yet there on that top bunk, you can bear up to 300 pounds. You know, I get up there on my kid's bunk. I love it. I'll just climb up there, hang out with the kids. Like, hey, how's it going? How's it hanging? You know, I'm like one of the kids. I'm still cool. Yeah. I still got it, you know?
Yep. So, you know, speaking of that, are these Z-Pods made for kids only, or can you include adults on the autistic spectrum along with them that could even use these?
Great question. Now, you know, it goes back to the every person's different, just like every kid is different. We do have, I think, 3 or 4 autistic adults who have used this and really love it. You know, one of them that I told you about was the young man, 18 years old, who would, you know, break down when arriving at home. Another was a young woman, 20 years old, that I told you about, whose disruptions of her parents dropped by about 90%. When she started using the bed. And she's a wonderful story because she brings her dog in there as well. She has a service animal and her dog just cuddles up with her. Not that one right there. That's a different. No. Hey, there's something about kids and dogs in beds that I think is very adorable. Now, you know, great question though about adults. We don't know, but we think that it's something that we is worth trying. We've seen it work with younger adults. I would assume that people don't change too much in their underlying sleep needs. You know, so what is it that you need? You need safety and security, and you need good sleep hygiene, and you need the right environment to make it all work. So I tend to think that there's some really strong potential there. That's been our line with a lot of the adults that we've worked with, and we'd be happy to work with them because we want to help. I mean, it's not like, you know, when I'm an adult sleeping 4 hours a night, it's okay. I kind of like not having that much sleep. No one's like that, except for maybe one of my business partners, but he's crazy. And so, you know, so yeah, we would definitely,
you know, or some of us that can actually get away with doing that. Yeah. And just.
There are, interestingly enough, there is this like bizarre, you know, kind of subset of people who are like literally they only need 4 hours of sleep. They only need that one cycle and it gets them through it. I've studied up on this. They're very rare. And I think I know one of them just because this guy's always going and he's only sleeping, you know, 4 hours a night and stuff. But I, you know, again, I would, that's one of those things where I would love to study it and see what happens, you know, but before we even do that, at this point, it's always going to be that question of, am I going to take this risk of getting this bed and either having an increase in sleep or just sleeping in a much cooler bed than I slept in before. You know, it's either way, I see it as a win no matter what. I see that we have value no matter what. I love our beds no matter what. But it's still a question that really is very, I don't know. It's very interesting.
Yeah. And I'm going to bring up the picture because I like looking at this, the sci-fi PlayStation 5.
That was such a fun family to work with as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's one other thing I was thinking of when I first saw this is just how easy is it to put together and how easy is it to transport in case the family that decides to move?
So the current model of the bed takes 2 people roughly 2 to 4 hours to set up. I'm very fast at it now because I've set up quite a few and helped out with that. Once you learn it, you're like, okay, this isn't rocket science. And actually for that reason, I like it when parents who have purchased it participate in the assembly process, because then when they move, they feel confident that they can slap it back together again once they're on the other end. So it's not hard per se. It's kind of like IKEA, but probably higher quality. But the new model, you know, without saying too much, is going to be even easier, by quite a bit. You know, and that was one of the things that we really wanted to work on is like, how do we make this? We think that there's a better method of engineering this thing, and we think we found it. So we're excited about that.
Nice. And of course, with these things, you know, as you mentioned before, what exactly is the cost of getting one of these? Because like you said, this is a startup and it's not going to be cheap at first, but, you know, and also maybe just what kind of goal are you setting for these kind of things? Is like a monthly payment and
and hopefully without being too salesy, you know, because I like what I love about this show is just like the conversational nature and stuff like that. But it is a $4,000 bed. Mm-hmm. We do have financing. We do have leasing. We also have little discounts that, you know, we can make people privy to if they could reach out to us. And so we try to find everything under the sun to be able to make it more affordable. The goal is to get it down to the $2,500 range. That seems to be the magic number where you, all of a sudden you're competing with any other bunk bed, except for yours is still cooler. You know,
and that's the thing to also keep in mind. This isn't just a single bed. This is a double bunk bed.
It is it is awesome. And so, you know, we recognize that the price tag is a little bit hefty for some people, but we have helped people get it through state funding. The state of Missouri has paid for these beds entirely for a few families. We've done it in the state of Missouri, you know, Minnesota, and we're working on it in several other states. It's a slow process, but we will always push for, you know, it's funny because I've seen this happen in special needs equipment. And I find
is going nuts again, but keep continuing.
I will. For your audience, I'm sure you'll hear this later. But one of the things that does bother me is that when you have special needs equipment, once special needs equipment gets covered by insurance, the temptation by the company is inevitably like, okay, we got to hike this price up because we got to make everything we can. And if it's insurance paying for it, then it's no biggie. I have the opposite impulse. And the reason why is because our bed, even though we're starting with the autism community, the intention is to go for every kid out there. Right. And if you're going to go for every kid out there, you have to think bigger than even insurance. You know, insurance can't be the thing that's just going to like solve all your problems. It just has to be so appealing and cool and, you know, and fun and effective. You know, that, well, you know, and I've seen it be effective for, you know, other children who don't have autism, you know, but the point is that I want it to be as broad an appeal as possible, because I feel like from a business perspective, quite frankly, I think that that's more effective. Mm. It's more fun. And it's a little bit more kind of edgy and revolutionary. We're trying to kick up some really cool ideas about what these things can do. Incidentally, you know, as to what I was saying about kids who are not on the spectrum using this bed, we've had one kid who was terrified of the monster under the bed, but now he has a veritable fort and does not worry about the monster, and he gets really good sleep. You know, that was one of our founder's sons. Another one of them would not get out of his parents' bed. You know, it just wouldn't, he wouldn't leave. He didn't want to sleep in his own room, but now he does, you know, and that's kind of the appeal. It's like autism is an outstanding place to start, particularly because the kids are so imaginative and they push you to the limits in terms of your own imagination. But hopefully this is one of those areas where autism, its presence in the world, makes the world a better place because of the way that it kind of makes us all just a little bit better in our imaginations.
That's a good attitude, the way to look at it. And especially, I'm guessing, another way to make it popular is, you know, like I mentioned, make it look like a PlayStation 5 since they're sold out everywhere and you can't find them except for scalpers.
That last year, if we had made it look like a roll of toilet paper, it also would have been an effective strategy. So
that too. Especially if you have a storage space to hide the toilet paper.
That's true. But PlayStation sounds a little bit more appealing from an aesthetics point of view. And kids do love, I like the futuristic view of it as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I believe you have mentioned this before. Yeah, you have mentioned this before, but, you know, what is the next, you know, your next step with this venture? Where do you see it in like 10 to 20, like 10 years down the line?
Well, in order to understand that, I'm just going to kind of give you an idea. And then that idea is the thing that steers us to what our long-term strategy is. In order for a person to sleep, it's great to have every piece of their environment in its place. And you think of all of the different senses, you know, that we have. They range from sight to smell to touch, you know, to hearing. All of those things, if you want to maximize the relaxation of those senses, you need to have an environment that's capable of doing so. And so that gives you an idea of where we're going. You know, if we have effectively every single sense that is being relaxed, you know, then that's the bet that I want to see in, you know, 10, 20 years. More in the immediate future, where some of the things we're working on. We continue to work with the autism community. It's been very fulfilling. The parents are heroic in what it is that they do for their children. I think that they're just amazing. We're looking right now at getting in with a few hotels that are closer to that are closer to some very autism friendly amusement parks. And so we're gunning for some of those. We think that we have a really
That was something else I wanted to bring up too. You mentioned of having them at hotels and even Airbnbs to help accommodate them, and just what initially brought this up? Did people actually go to you asking about it, or
one of the biggest dilemmas we have in trying to sell this bed is here. I'm saying, hey, this bed's a little bit of it's got a little bit of a price tag, but trust us, it's going to be great. That's a hard gamble. And so I don't expect parents to, you know, they're not dumb. You know, I'm not dumb. Like, we all know that it's going to take a sacrifice. And so before you make that type of a sacrifice, it would be really nice to be able to test it out. So, you know, the initial model is, oh, we should have brick and mortar stores. But the thing is, like, are you really experiencing the bed when you go to a brick and mortar store and then just kind of jump on? You know, jump in the bed and that's it. You know, no, the only way to really experience it as I could imagine it was, well, we need a place where people can stay. So that's been, we've actually had these beds there put in two Airbnbs around the Indiana area. And
my home state right now.
I know. So go check it out. I can send you the name of the people who own those Airbnbs. You know, go check it out. See if it's something that really helps. So we've done that, and we have some others that we think are on the way, and we are working on hotels. We are working on, there's one other one that I want to mention, furniture stores as just a place to have them presented. You know, anybody who sees these like in person, they're always kind of taken aback, like, oh, that's different in person. And then they really kind of dig it. They think it's like, oh, this, I kind of like this. This is cool. You know, so we do have a strategy for the immediate future, but the long-term vision really is, I want a full sensory experience. You know, I think this is what I love telling people is, you know, my favorite night of sleep was a few years ago. I was on a business trip down to Laguna. I was working for an investment firm. And then they had me stay at a surf and sand hotel on the beach. Like, I was there on the first floor, right next to the waves. And those waves were pounding on the foundation of my building, and I could feel it. And I thought, like, how am I going to sleep through this? Well, I slept through that, and I slept really well. You know, between the smell of the waves, the sound of the waves, the feeling, all of that. If I could recreate that in a bed, I'd do it in a heartbeat. And I would do it every night for the rest of my life. It's almost like being in the womb, you know?
Yeah, it's just something about nature that's very relaxing that you can't get with being in deep in the cityscape, you know?
But imagine if you could recreate that. And here I'm just being a futuristic visionary, you know, but imagine if you could effectively simulate that in your sleep environment. And I think, again, all of the technology that is required to make this happen is in existence or coming into existence right now. But the total cost of those things, you know, when you put them together in one product, is simply too great for any consumer to buy, you know, save for a few billionaires out there, you know. But in time, you know, look at the cell phone, you know, this thing right here, they used to charge $4,000 for these back in the 80s, you know, and it didn't, you couldn't play games on your phone.
They were just dumb phones with a very large thing, large bricks that you had to carry them in a briefcase.
And so innovation is a spectacular thing. And I'm excited to see more of it.
And we are actually getting closer down to the wire. And I really want to thank you for being able to take your time to tell us more about these beds and just how helpful they are. And, you know, and just where can they go to learn more about these and just see for themselves all the testimonies and whatnot, or even how to contact you? to learn more?
Oh, absolutely. Our website is zpodsforsleep.com. And we actually have a Facebook page. You could follow us on Facebook. On the Zpods page, it actually has a, it has a contact page. You can reach out to me there or just use my email. My email is george@zpods.io. And, you know, welcome to write to me there. So and we can talk. I love having these conversations.
Yeah, and I've been meaning to get these little banners up so they can write it down if they're watching the video cast version of this, zpodsforsleep.com. And also, if you would like to contact them, george@zpods.io, so that you could just learn more about it and see if this is the perfect solution for your child who is on the spectrum that could really use a good night's sleep, or if you're an adult that's on the autistic spectrum and see if this is also a perfect fit for you. And yeah, and again, thank you for really showing up for the very first episode of this year for this podcast. I really appreciate it. It's good to be back in the game.
Yeah, I'm excited to see who you continue to bring on the show. I saw that you had Sam Farmer and some other really wonderful people. So yeah. Thank you. It's a privilege.
Yeah, next week, actually, it's actually going to be more of a big panel, actually, with, you know, since things are opening up, the speaker world, of course, you're going to have them coming up. And, of course, we have a huge panel to discuss all the pros and cons and all the other things about it. And one of them happens to be on the autistic spectrum himself as well. Same thing, Asperger syndrome, just like me. So it'd be good to talk to him again, since he was on the previous episode, actually, to talk about his story, Tucker Bearden. Trying to remember which episode that was, but you know, you can look it up on the on all the major platforms: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, etc. And also, of course, we have Facebook, Instagram, and also a Patreon if you would like to be able to contribute so that we could keep the show going. And I believe, thanks, Sherry. She just mentioned from the audience, congrats on the first show of the season, Chris.
Awesome. Well, I'm really grateful to have gotten a chance to appear, and we'll continue to be in touch, Chris.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, sometime in the future, I want a bed like that, because, you know, sci-fi, as long as there's no alien on board trying to...
But if there is, I mean, really, that would be kind of cool, too.
As long as there's a friendly alien, not like alien like the movie Alien. Yeah,
none of the open mouth and other alien coming out of the mouth alien.
None of that. Yeah. One of those friendly aliens.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And again, this is Christopher D. Casson, and we are about to sign off. So thank you again, and join us next time for another episode of Through Autistic Eyes. Take care, everyone.
Bye-bye.